The Productive Woman, episode 485. Hello and welcome to this episode of The Productive Woman. My name is Laura McClellan, and this is a podcast about productivity for busy women. My goal is to help you find the tools and encouragement you need to manage your time, life, stress, and stuff so you can accomplish the things you care about most and make a life that matters. Well, welcome and thank you so much for joining me. In this episode, we're going to be talking about Swedish death cleaning. You'll find more information and links to several resources mentioned in the show, all in the show notes for this episode at theproductivewoman.com/485. So, Swedish death cleaning, or dostadning in Swedish, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, is basically a methodical approach to decluttering that encourages people, especially those who are older, to simplify their lives and possessions in order to ease the burden on loved ones who will handle their estate after they pass away. The concept, as I understand it, has been around for quite a while in Swedish and Scandinavian cultures, but began to gain international attention when the book The Gentle Art of Swedish Death Cleaning, written by Swedish artist Margareta Magnusson, was published in 2017. As you think about it, this method is particularly significant when considered within the context of our lives as women. Historically, women have been the custodians of family heirlooms, caretakers of homes, and keepers of the family memories. And this is a rich and fulfilling role, but it also comes with the responsibility of managing many, many possessions that will accumulate over a lifetime. Swedish death cleaning offers a dignified, practical approach to managing these possessions, ensuring that the legacy left behind is one of love, simplicity, and thoughtfulness, rather than a burden of clutter for loved ones to sort through. I had heard of this concept of Swedish death cleaning quite a while ago, but only recently decided to dig in and look into it and learn more about it. I started by reading Ms. Magnusson's book, The Gentle Art of Swedish Death Cleaning, and then read some other materials, articles, and another book. And I thought I would share with you what I've learned regarding its principles, benefits, and a few practical steps to incorporating it into our lives. So first of all, what is Swedish death cleaning? It comes from the word dostadning, which is a hybrid of the Swedish words for death and cleaning. A good housekeeping article that I read describes it this way. Swedish death cleaning is a well-known concept in Swedish and Scandinavian culture where you work on eliminating unnecessary items from your home so loved ones won't be burdened with the task after you pass. And as I understand it from the materials I read, the concept of Swedish death cleaning developed within the context of Swedish culture, which overall, as kind of a generality, prioritizes simplicity, efficiency, sustainability, cleanliness, order, and a considerate attitude toward others, in particular family and friends. If you've been listening for a few years, you might remember our guest in episode 231, Swedish journalist Jane Anderson, who introduced us to the Swedish value of lagom, which is roughly translated as not too much, not too little. Swedish death cleaning reflects that value in its focus on eliminating anything that's unnecessary, both to make your own life simpler and to make things easier on your loved ones after you're gone. Another book that I read called The Swedish Death Cleaning Bible notes that by tidying up one's life systematically, people ensure that their loved ones are not burdened with the task later. And again, it's my understanding from the reading that I've done that this is a priority among Swedish culture of thinking of other people, being considerate towards the impact of your life and your choices on other people. The sort of philosophical underpinnings of Swedish death cleaning are similar to the things I've already talked about. mindfulness and thinking about materialism. Swedish death cleaning encourages mindfulness about the accumulation of possessions, and it challenges societal norms around materialism, particularly here, I would say, in the United States, which, of course, is the culture that I know best. You know, there is this, whether it's spoken or not, a very broad focus on acquisition of material things. So the Swedish Death Cleaning Bible, which I mentioned earlier, summarizes the unique philosophy behind Swedish death cleaning as opposed to other methods or approaches to decluttering as various concepts that are important to it. First of all, acknowledging the inevitability of death. She says in the book, by accepting the inevitable nature of one's passing, individuals can free themselves from the overwhelming burden of material possessions they accumulate throughout their lives. This mindset provides motivation and purpose in organizing and decluttering one's living space. So that's one component of the philosophy behind Swedish death cleaning, according to this book, the Swedish Death Cleaning Bible, which was written by Lynn, and I apologize if I'm getting this name wrong. It looks like Sjoberg, Sjoberg. In any event, so the first component is this acknowledging the inevitability of death. Second one is taking responsibility for your impact on the people around you. In the Death Cleaning Bible, she says, by decluttering your home and removing unnecessary belongings, you make their lives easier as they have fewer items to sort through, which alleviates emotional distress during an already challenging time. So Swedish death cleaning, it's not as morbid as it maybe sounds. It's really forward thinking about what you're leaving behind and the impact it's going to have on the people who you leave behind. The third element of the philosophy underpinning this, according to this Swedish Death Cleaning Bible, is fostering mindful connections with objects. She says, instead of blindly clinging to objects for sentimental reasons or out of habit, this practice asks people to consider whether their belongings still serve a purpose or bring joy. The next element is prioritizing quality over quantity. Again, in the book, she says, mindful owners of well-made, durable objects usually feel more satisfied and fulfilled than those who own numerous low-quality items. So this concept guides the acquisition of new items going forward as you're going through this process of purging and organizing as part of Swedish death cleaning. This concept guides the things that you acquire going forward, making those things earn their place in your home and your life. The next element is simplifying life through decluttering. So the idea is not just for the benefit of the people you're leaving behind, but also to make your life simpler and more joyful and more easy, I guess. It also, the philosophy underlying Swedish death cleaning involves encouraging generosity. So instead of hanging on to things, you're sharing them, you're putting them out there for other people who may find use for them or joy in them. And finally, the idea of commemorating memories rather than holding on to items. In Magnuson's book and in the other articles and books that I read, they all talk about the reality is that we don't have to hang on to things to keep the memories that those things remind us of. Swedish death cleaning also incorporates the consideration of legacy and how what we leave behind can affect the memories we leave with our loved ones. So the idea behind Swedish death cleaning, again, is to be very thoughtful and intentional about the items we choose to keep and the meaning they have, not just for us, but also for those we leave behind. For many women, Swedish death cleaning is not just about minimizing clutter, but about curating a life's collection that truly reflects their journey, their values, and the love shared with family and friends. So the process is an invitation to revisit those memories, to make peace with the past, and decide very thoughtfully and intentionally which items actually and genuinely add value to your life and should be passed on to the next generations. Women often play a pivotal role in maintaining family stories through physical items like photo albums, heirlooms, and personal mementos. Swedish death cleaning provides a very structured way to decide which of those items you've collected over the years hold genuine historical or emotional significance. And this process allows women to share stories and meanings behind selected items with their family, ensuring that those narratives, those important stories from our past and even from our present, continue to live on after us. So some of the benefits of Swedish death cleaning that I read about and really resonated with me as I was doing some research here. First of all the resources that are writing about this, all the people writing about it, talk about the benefit of increased emotional well-being. Decluttering, and we've talked about this before, right? Decluttering can lead to a sense of peace and fulfillment, knowing that your affairs are in order. This is especially true as we get older, but these benefits are valuable to us at all ages and stages of life. When things are in order, we as women are more at peace and can enjoy our lives more. And so, you know, I've talked about The Gentle Art of Swedish Death Cleaning, which was published in 2017. The other book I've been talking about, The Swedish Death Cleaning Bible, was published more recently in 2023. And it describes how embracing Swedish death cleaning unfolds a world where decluttering is not a chore, but a heartwarming process of liberation and discovering a pathway to tranquility, simplicity, and an uncluttered life filled with joy and serenity. That really, really resonated with me, that process of liberation as we are liberated from the burden of caring for all these things we've accumulated over time. Creating a more orderly and more serene environment is known to reduce stress, and it certainly reduces the emotional load of owning and caring for so many possessions. So it's about making our life work better now as much as it is about thinking about what we leave behind. But that is the next benefit of it. So first of all, the emotional well-being that comes from simplifying our lives, unloading some of what we've accumulated, and keeping those things that have usefulness and meaning to us. But the second benefit that all the resources talk about is increased ease for family members, for the people we leave behind. A major focus of Swedish death cleaning is the practical benefits for family members who won't be burdened with sorting through a lifetime of possessions because you've done some of that work for them ahead of time. In the Swedish Death Cleaning Bible, the author notes that one of the key principles of Swedish death cleaning is coming to terms with one's mortality while simultaneously reflecting on the value of personal belongings. She goes on to say, by acknowledging that no one lives forever, we can begin to minimize the clutter surrounding us, which ultimately helps our loved ones manage what remains without feeling overwhelmed. And so that's a big focus of it. But of course, it's not the only benefit of it. You get immediate benefits as for yourself, as well as the benefits to the people you leave behind. A third benefit of it is environmental considerations. Being more mindful about both what we keep and what we thereafter acquire is good not only for us and for our loved ones, but also for the environment. As we have opportunity to donate and recycle items, which reduces waste and benefits the community as a whole. So that's an important element of this, I think, that reflects the Swedish cultural values that I mentioned earlier. It is, in general, a considerate approach to decluttering. This method encourages women, men and women both, but we're talking specifically about women, to take a considered approach to decluttering, one that respects the emotional and practical implications of downsizing one's possessions. By choosing what to keep, what to give away, and what to dispose of, we as women can make thoughtful decisions that reflect our concern for the environment, the well-being of our family, and the legacy we want to leave behind. So thinking about all of that, the background, where it came from, as I'm understanding it from the research that I've done, the benefits of it to us, to those we love, and to the community at large, what are some of the practical steps that are recommended to start this process? And there are several of them. The first one is to start early. So in her book, Magnuson suggests that the age 65 is a good age to start death cleaning, but there are certainly valuable benefits to starting much younger than that. Not only can you enjoy the benefits of a decluttered space at the time that you're doing this process, but we frankly, none of us know what day will be our last, right? As I was preparing for this episode, I kept thinking about a beloved aunt and uncle of mine, one of my mother's brothers, younger brothers, and his wife, who, while I was still in law school, died very unexpectedly in an auto accident well before they were 65. They left behind a home and a place of business. He was a locksmith and had run his own locksmith business for many years. And both his home and his business place, they were stuffed full of belongings. I mean, floor to ceiling. They had so many things that they had accumulated at home, you know, personal belongings, business equipment and papers and all those things over the course of many years. They had no children. And so it fell to my mother, who was the relative who lived closest to them geographically, to get their belongings sorted out and disposed of. And it was a huge task. But what I remember most vividly is how difficult it was for her to be grieving the sudden loss of a brother and a sister-in-law she was very close to, while she was having to go through all these belongings and sort them out and deal with all the fallout of a very sudden and unexpected death. And I don't say that, I don't tell that story to be morbid, but it just, for me, drove home that maybe we don't want to wait till we're 65 before we start going through our belongings and thinking about what's going to be left behind. Because at any moment, we could breathe our last, right? Again, not trying to be morbid here, but there's a truth there. So waiting, thinking we have all the time in the world is maybe an optimistic approach, but it's not realistic. And at the same time that we are losing time to kind of go through our belongings and pare them down and for the benefit of the world and our loved ones, we also don't get to enjoy the benefits of a decluttered space. So why not start sooner rather than later, I guess is my point. The second practical recommendation is to start small. So in her book, Magnuson recommends starting with items that are easier to part with, things that don't have sentimental value, and then gradually moving toward more challenging categories. So she says she always starts with clothing and items that take up a lot of space, like furniture and tools and things like that. And she saves photos and letters and similar sentimental items for last, after you've done all the other stuff. Another element of that, or another practical recommendation, is to start with just one room or one area of your home. And Magnuson again suggests starting with the attic or the basement, if you have one, or the closet or cupboard that's by your front door, because you're likely to find items in any of those areas that you can part with pretty easily because they've been there for long periods of time, usually without you needing them or using them, and they're probably not going to have that much sentimental value. So you can find things to donate or discard, things maybe like broken holiday decor, children's toys, if your kids are all grown and gone and your grandchildren have outgrown them, even if, or you don't have grandchildren. So looking for things like that, that are easy to dispose of. Obviously things that are broken or stained or any of those sorts of things, things that don't work, those you're going to just dispose of responsibly. Other things that maybe will have value to someone else, you can donate to the Red Cross or to the Salvation Army or some other charity shop in your area. But starting small with things that are easier to dispose of. It's important to note, I think, that unlike some methods, like for instance, the KonMari method, which, you know, has value as well, Swedish death cleaning is an incremental process. You know, the KonMari method is very much a drastic change. You gather all your books from everywhere in the house and you put them in one place and you touch each thing and decide what sparks joy and get rid of everything else. And then you do all the clothes and, you know, whatever that it is. It's a massive, drastic change. The Swedish death cleaning is not like that. It's very much an incremental process. And Magnuson and the other sources that I looked at, they all recommend that we take our time to do this. When you get to handling sentimental items, the practical recommendation here is to keep in mind, because you are taking your time, the advantage of Swedish death cleaning and the process that it calls for is that you can take your time and think about the items that you're going through. So you're not, unlike other methods which might focus on, is this thing useful or does this thing spark joy? In Swedish death cleaning, you're looking at it a little bit differently. You're encouraged to think about the meaning each item has for you, the story that it tells about you or about your life or about the people in your life. So here I'm talking about specifically those things that have sentimental value that maybe have been hard for you to get rid of. This process encourages us to really take the time to think about the item. What is the value of it? What story does it tell about you? What meaning does it have for you? And also, will that item have that same meaning for someone else? And so one of the things that Swedish death cleaning recommends, Magnuson, for instance, in her book, talked about that you don't have to get rid of it, everything, just because it doesn't spark joy or it's not useful. She, in fact, suggests in her book that we have a box labeled to throw away later or something like that. And it's going to contain items that are meaningful to you. Maybe they're not useful, but these are sentimental items that have some real meaning for you personally. So you want to keep them to look at from time to time, but maybe they don't have meaning for anybody else. So these are things that are to be discarded when you die. So that's, you know, the labeling is to throw away when I'm gone, because you want to keep them. You don't want to get rid of them yet. You want to be able to look at them, touch them, reminisce about them for a period of time, you know, while you're alive, but there's no reason for them to be kept when you're gone. And by labeling them that way, you've made the job a little easier for your loved ones who are taking care of your estate when you're gone. And I like that idea, but she does recommend, and others that talk about this recommend, you kind of limit it to one box and not, you know, a whole attic full of things. Everything doesn't have that much meaning. And I'm saying that to myself as much as to you, because I have historically been a person who finds sentimental meaning in just about anything. But I like this idea of having one box of those things that I know nobody else cares about this, but it matters to me, and I'm going to keep it, but label it that, y'all, when I'm gone, you can just toss this. Some articles in the process for doing your Swedish death cleaning suggest the idea of using red and green sticky dots for boxes and big items. A red sticker on an item means this one goes. It's either being given away or thrown away. Green means I'm keeping this. This could be especially useful if you are engaging in this purging process in preparation for moving, and you'll have helpers, either paid helpers or volunteers, family members, who are going to be loading and transporting things to your new home. Make it easy for them. They know if it's green, it goes. If it's red, don't take this to the new place because it's going to be thrown away. So that's a practical way of handling some of this stuff. Again, this is a very systematic approach, and the recommendations are to follow a systematic approach to doing it. Swedish death cleaning is a very methodical approach, going room by room with a focus on keeping what adds value and joy to your life, whether because of its usefulness, its beauty, or its meaning, that is the story that it tells that's important to you and perhaps to others. So as part of the process, I mentioned earlier that the idea is you look at these items and you ask about whether you want to keep this, whether it's going to go. And that involves asking yourself a lot of questions, and there are different ones that are suggested by different resources. Things like, which of these possessions truly add value to my life? How do I want to be remembered by my loved ones? That's a great question to ask yourself as you're starting the process, because it helps kind of put context into the decision of what to keep and what to get rid of and how much you want to keep around. In the Swedish Death Cleaning Bible, the author suggests several other really good questions as you pick up an item, whether it's a sentimental item or otherwise. Do I need this? Have I used it recently? Will it bring joy or value to someone else? Is it time to let it go? And a question that I just love that was asked, I forget where I read this one. Will anyone be happier if I save this? Nobody can answer that question for you but you, but it's a great question to ponder as you're trying to decide. So asking those questions as you're going room by room, item by item, looking at things, they suggest, that is the various sources that I read, including the two books, sort items in each room into three categories: give away, throw away, and keep. And they all suggest getting rid of the items in the first two categories just as quickly as you can. So as soon as you fill up a bag or box of the throwaway items, get it out to the trash or to the dump or to the recycle center, depending on what it is. Those items that you know you're going to give away, get them to the charity shop or to the friend or loved one that you're going to give them to as quickly as you can, so they don't just pile up somewhere in a different configuration than they already were. The last sort of practical recommendation that I read a lot in the different sources was about documenting and sharing this process. So make an inventory of those items with special meaning or significant value, whether monetary or otherwise, and share that with the family, including stories and instructions about what's to be done with them. So take the time to document the stories behind those important items and share those narratives with those family members. This can be a really meaningful way to pass on family history and values. So if there's a portrait or, a set of china or something that has a story behind it, whether your story or the story of where it came from, if maybe you inherited it from someone else in the family, writing those stories down and keeping those with the items, sharing those with the family members can be a really important part of the process. And of course, consider gifting items thoughtfully and intentionally to family and friends, not just as a way to declutter your space, but as a means of sharing joy and memories. So be thoughtful about what you give away, not just unloading and saying, here, you take this, whether it has any meaning or value to the person you're trying to give it to or not. Instead of doing that, be really thoughtful and intentional about what you pass on to other people. And if you have certain people in mind to receive certain possessions when you're gone, label them with that person's name, or perhaps just give those items to those people now if they're not something you're using, but just something you're holding on to. And certainly, as you undertake this process of Swedish death cleaning, let your family and close friends know what you're doing. They might want to help you with the process of going through it or taking things away to the recycle center, any of those sorts of things. You know, make it a shared process, I guess. And then aside from just the process of going room by room through the items that you have and sorting them the way we've talked about, we can implement the concepts and the philosophy of Swedish death cleaning into our daily lives. It should be a regular practice. Those who've written about Swedish death cleaning emphasize the importance of making this purging and decluttering a regular part of our life rather than a one-time event. It's an ongoing kind of thing. So incorporate decluttering as a regular part of your life, reflecting on your possessions and their significance continually. This ongoing process can be truly empowering and allow us to constantly adapt to our life's changes. A second way of implementing Swedish death cleaning and the philosophies behind it into our daily life is to be more mindful about the things we acquire. So all of these writers encourage very thoughtful consideration before acquiring new items to prevent clutter from accumulating again. So, you know, we talked earlier about emphasizing quality over quantity and making new items earn their place in your space and in your life. And finally, communicating with loved ones. All of these writers that I consulted write about the importance of open communication with family members about the process you're undertaking and the decisions you're making. So those are just kind of the highlights of what I learned about this concept and process of Swedish death cleaning. I found it very interesting, and you know, maybe it's because I'm going to turn 64 in another couple of months, but maybe it's just, you know, the right time for me to be thinking about it. I will have in the show notes for this episode links for the two books that I referenced the most, which are The Gentle Art of Swedish Death Cleaning, How to Free Yourself and Your Family from a Lifetime of Clutter by Margareta Magnusson, and The Swedish Death Cleaning Bible by Lynn Sjoberg. And I apologize to my Swedish friends if I'm mispronouncing that. So links to those books, plus several articles that I read and thought were really useful, all will be linked in the show notes for this episode. I guess to sum up, Swedish death cleaning as a concept offers a way to approach decluttering from a holistic and thoughtful perspective, focusing not just on the physical act of cleaning out possessions, but also on the emotional and relational aspects of what we leave behind. And so as you consider the questions we talked about before, things like which of my possessions add value to my life, and how do I want to be remembered by my loved ones? And will anyone be happier if I save this? Think about what small step you can take this week toward purging your possessions, decluttering your space, and what benefits you might hope to gain from doing so. So those are my thoughts on it. I'd love to know what you think about the concept of Swedish death cleaning and how might you implement it in your life. You can share your questions, your thoughts, your ideas about this in the comments section of the show notes for this episode, which you will find along with the links I mentioned at theproductivewoman.com/485, or post a comment or question on the Productive Woman Facebook page. If you are a member of the Productive Woman Community Facebook group, you can also post there about it. That's a great place to continue a conversation about this. You know, I'd be especially interested if you're, you know, say younger than 65, is this something that you can see implementing in your own life, even at a younger age? And if so, how would you do that? And why do you think it would be valuable to you or not, if, as the case may be? As always, if you prefer to share your thoughts with me privately, you can email your questions, comments, or suggestions to me at feedback@theproductivewoman.com, and I would love to hear from you. And that is it for this episode of The Productive Woman. Thank you so much for spending this time with me. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you found something in it that's helpful or encouraging to you. I look forward to talking with you again very soon. So until next time, remember, extend grace to each other and to yourself, and go make your life matter.